these will come up as referred to, Busser Day. And you know, the difficulty, not only Srimad Bhagavatam, but of course, if we read any Vedic literature by Srila Vyasadeva, then we would see that it is consistent because it's the same author. And just like Vyasadeva presented Bhagavad Gita, and there Krishna describes that he is, that Supreme Personality of Godhead. We know that Krishna is the son of Vasudeva, and he's known as Vasudeva, and he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is the same which is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, why would Vyasadeva go to so much trouble to compile the story of Greater India, which centres around Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the Mahabharata and his teachings? Why would Vyasadeva write all the Vedic literatures, and then if he thought that Krishna wasn't Bhagavan and he was saying that, why would he present his literature as the and not only did he present it, but he presented that in Kali Yuga this is the main book that people should read, Bhagavad Gita. Even if they don't read any other Vedic literature, if they just read that Bhagavad Gita, that will suffice. So he said, why would Vyasadeva do that? So he's accepting that Krishna is the Supreme. So this consistency is there. But generally when people read Vedic literatures, they don't even know who Vyasadeva is sometimes. So, nor do they know, the conclusion of the Vedanta, the conclusion of the Vedas. And of course, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says himself that this is based upon it's an expansion of the Vedas. It's an explanation of the Vedanta, which is a conclusion. So Bhagavad Gita itself says it is an explanation of the Vedanta. So, these things are consistent, but Srila Prabhupada may be criticised by others as if he's tampering with the Bhagavad Gita. But in fact, he only ever reminds us of what has already been consistently stated throughout all the Vedas by the author and within this book again and again and again. Thank you. And we see here that, therefore, we have to have faith in the actual spiritual master. And this purport describes that, he says, eat tach chid atmakam. These words are very important. The material body consists only of material elements, but when one awakens to Krishna conscious understanding, the body is no longer material but spiritual. The material body is meant for sense enjoyment, whereas the spiritual body engages in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Therefore, a devotee who engages in the service of the Supreme Lord and who constantly thinks of him should never be considered to have a material body. It is therefore enjoined, Guru Shu Nara Mati. One should stop thinking of the spiritual master as an ordinary human being with a material body. Right? So he is not subject to the four defects of other ordinary human beings, such as cheating and imperfect senses. Making mistakes, being an illusion. But that's how people think of Prabhupada, who's commenting on these books. Oh, he has his opinion, someone else has them. And similarly, you know, to prove that point, we also hear that the Arch of Vigraha is also, you know, the deity in the temple is made of stone, but everyone in India knows to think of the deity as stone is offensive. God is it. But similarly, if that stone or the body of the spiritual master is infused by the spiritual potency of the Lord, being only in relationship with the Lord, we should see the presence of the personality of God in there. And therefore, we, and the fact is, as Prabhupada said, who can argue the spiritual potency of either the deities of the Lord or the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, and his, you know, bona fide representatives. Srila Prabhupada, when he was in Los Angeles, you know, he was saying when he returned to Los Angeles after some years, and so many nice devotees, temple worship going on, so nice. And he'd been around the world so many times. And he was reminding them. Prabhupada was there when they looked at that building. It was an old church. He said when he went there, it was empty. No one was coming. No one was interested. He said, now we have these deities of Krishna, Radha Madhava. It is full. So many people are coming. So much enthusiasm. So he said, you know, I've not paid these people to come. I'm not bribing them. And he says this is repeating itself all over the world. So why would people come to see stone? There's a spiritual potency there. And of course, similarly, in Srila Prabhupada's explaining the Bhagavad Gita as it is, because he is only doing it in the service of Krishna, not for some remuneration, then therefore there's a spiritual potency. And as you said, you know, before that, so many Gitas, so many gurus, and not one devotee. You know, so many, over hundreds of years. As soon as you present Bhagavad Gita as it is, so Srila Prabhupada, you know, one may see that Srila Prabhupada or, you know, his representative disciples and grand disciples who become gurus, that they are accepting so much adoration, so much money, so much service. And one may think, oh, who is this? You know, what qualifies this person to, you know, accept all this? So Srila Prabhupada said, the spiritual master, he's like a collector. You know, that just like the government collector, the tax collector collects on behalf of the government, he's just a collector. They collect and give to the government. That's his, you know, his spiritual master is a collector like that. They're collecting, you know, they collect so much adoration going to Krishna, so much service going to Krishna, so much money going to Krishna, in this way, opening so many temples, distributing so many books, and all like that. So this is... And of course, we'll discuss the importance of the spiritual master, because as it just, we read in the summary here, that there are many devotees, but, you know, amongst them, we do select someone who we feel that above everyone else, this person alone is a person who can help me and understand me and guide me personally. perfectly. You know, so that is of course the diksha, guru, amongst many devotees, and it's important to actually be able to distinguish that, because you know, there are many devotees, and they're all gurus in one sense or another, to one degree or another. But not all of them can actually, in fact, as you said, one. Krishna empowers amongst all of them that this particular one person, above all, will be central, because I will empower this person to enter right within your heart and understand exactly how to properly guide you above all the devotees. Even if that person is not as advanced as other devotees, still, that's Krishna will, you know, it gives that personal connection like that. So, text number 3. The Supreme Godhead is the supreme platform on which everything rests. The ingredient by which everything has been produced, and the person who is created and is the only cause of this cosmic manifestation. Nonetheless, he is different from the cause and the result. I surrender unto him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is self-sufficient in everything. So we studied in, you know, the previous canto, how the Supreme Lord is you know, that this we studied about understanding the variety of spiritual existence, that everything is personal, there are personal exchanges between the Lord and his devotees in wonderful environments. And that's very important to understand. That understanding is extremely rare. So here, it is also being expressed by, but it is common to the devotees. So here again, Gajendra is expressing this. Prabhupada quoting Bhagavad Gita 9.4, the Lord says, Maya tatam idam savam jagat avyaktamurtana. I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that everything rests upon my energy, just as an earthen pot rests on the earth. This is an example. The place where an earthen pot rests is also earth. Then again, the earthen pot is manufactured by a potter whose body is a product of the earth. The potter's wheel with which the pot is made is an expansion of earth, and the ingredients from which the pot is made are also earth. So we're looking, therefore, you know, we're looking at this analogy. The original cause of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And after being annihilated, everything rests in him. That's the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. Lord Ramchandra, or Lord Krishna, is the original cause of everything. And there's that nice verse quoted from the Brahma Samhita 5.1. And although he is everything, his personality is different from the cosmic manifestation. So that example of the earthen pot is, you know, very, very easy to understand. We may question it, you know. Somehow people just get that concept of oneness stuck when it comes to spiritual life, and they just want to just completely refute that there's variety. But and yet we see it right in front of our eyes that the pot is one with the earth. It was created by a potter. He's also one with the earth. The potter's wheel, one with the earth. well, it's all finished, it goes back to the earth, but, you know, there's variety. The only difference is that the varieties in the spiritual realm are eternally manifest, with those which are manifest here are temporarily manifest. That's the only difference. But that one difference can be seen. Text 4. The Supreme Person of Godhead, by expanding his own energy, keeps this cosmic manifestation visible, and again sometimes renders it invisible. He is both the supreme cause and the supreme result, the observer and the witness in all circumstances. Thus he is transcendental to everything. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead give me protection. So this verse, Parasya Shakti Vibhadeva Suyate, he has multi-potencies. Therefore, as soon as he likes, he uses one of his potencies, and by that expansion, he creates this cosmic manifestation. Again, when the cosmic manifestation is annihilated, it rests in him. Nonetheless, he is infallibly the supreme observer. Under any circumstances, the supreme Lord is changeless. He is simply a witness and is aloof from all creation and annihilation. So that's what makes him transcendental, of course, is that he is creating something from his energies, not as if he's breaking up his person to create something. His energies do it. So therefore he can remain as a person doing things, observing the creation, observing his destruction. He just stands there watching and willing everything to be. So that is described again and again in the Vedic literature. And of course, you know, it makes sense. So if you take some of the religions which consider themselves very old, although they're actually sort of modern, really, you know, like Christianity, Muslim religion, you know, really more modern compared to Sanatana Dharma, even Judaism. But now they're praying to God since, you know, the last 2,000 years. And they understand that he's witnessing everything and hearing all their prayers. And yet within that last 2,000 years, everything is changing. But even the Christians struggle to understand whether God is a person or just some, you know, impersonal. As time goes by, more and more their understanding is more impersonal. They say the Supreme Father, etc., like that, but even the clergy, they don't really have a firm faith that God is a person so much. They struggle with it. They present that, but they actually struggle to philosophically understand that. That, you know, God is an actual person. And yet it makes sense that then who has been, despite so many things changing, coming and going, if God is impersonal, it would appear that the witness is an ever-changing witness. You know, if God is just everything, then it's like, okay, someone is witnessing now, but it may not be consistent with the witness 1,000 years ago, because everything is changing, times are changing. But if they consider, well, if it is the same person who's witnessed all that, so all those different changes, then they would have to understand that therefore he is a transcendental person. He does exist as a person. No, it's quite a, you know, it's a significant point. You know, it's not like the witness in the sense of a camera that, you know, someone commits a crime and there's a CCTV, there's some film, some camera's film. So then one person may witness that film, and then they say, oh, we don't think it was that person, and then, you know, they want to convict them, but they get it wrong. Oh, it doesn't look like that person. And then 10 years later, they dig up the case, another person witnesses the same film. Oh, you know, it is that person. And then they convict them of that. So, you know, religion is a little bit like that. There's a witness, there's a witnessing feature of the universe, but perhaps God is, you know, manifesting and non-manifesting in different ways. Like that one personality may not be the same. There's a witnessing mechanism, but whether it's a one person, they don't seem to be able to have firm faith in. But what we're saying is that witnessing mechanism, if you think about it, it has to be the same person. And naturally, it's the same person that's been there since the beginning of creation. It would have to be, because if the material world is set up with a witnessing mechanism, who did that? And why would they do that? And, who is implementing, the judgment? If you think of it properly, when you go back to the beginning of creation, the person who intends to witness has set up that ability and the nature of the universe, and things are being witnessed for a particular reason. So again, it sort of points out that there is one person that goes all the way back to the beginning of creation. Here, we're seeing that the witnessing person not only is there before creation, but during maintenance, and even after annihilation. So that also suggests one person, doesn't it? Someone says, God is all-knowing. That means he knows everything before creation, during creation, and after creation. So if he's all-knowing, that again suggests one person. I know what was before. Otherwise, if he says, well, look, you know, I wasn't there at the beginning, but I know what's going on now. That's God is dead. God is dead means that maybe God was there in the beginning, you saw what happened in creation, but he's got no idea what's going on now, and therefore we've got all this chaos. That's the God is dead theory. But actually, all-knowing, which is the terms that all religions use for God, means that, no, he was there in the beginning, he was there now, and he was, you know, be there at the end. So it tends to point to one person. So actually, these verses are indicating that God is a person, one person. And these teachings are the same teachings in Christianity, Muslim religion, Judaism, but they're not understanding it. And that is because there's no bhakti. To the degree of bhakti, they will understand, but if the bhakti is not there... Now, there cannot be bhakti, as we've discussed previously, until one comes to the understanding that I am a spirit soul, not this bodily designation, and the activities of the soul in relationship with the personality of Godhead constitutes bhakti, which is completely transcendental. And only when there's love for God will God reveal himself through revelation. There is no material means to understand him. Now, Christianity, Muslim religion, Judaism, Hinduism are all bodily designations. Actually, Prabhupada said, I heard one statement Prabhupada was saying the other day, that anyone who identifies himself as a Christian, Muslim, they're no better than the animals. See, a dog thinks, I'm a dog. In other words, a dog thinks, whatever this bodily identification is, I identify with that. I'm a dog. A cat thinks, so therefore, what does the dog do? They bark, they run around, they do all sorts of things like that. Eats it, nonsense, chase cars. If one identifies that I am a Hindu because of this body, I was born here, therefore I'm Hindu. I was born there, therefore I'm Muslim. That's exactly what the dogs are doing. They're no better than dogs and animals. It's a very strong statement, isn't it? But that's unless one rises above such bodily concept of life to even understand one is a spirit soul, that's the beginning to understand, well, God is also a spirit soul beyond the designations of Hinduism, Judaism, Buddhism, this one, that is, but he's the supreme one maintaining all other living entities. I'm a spirit soul. I should not be identifying with anything in the material world. And the Supreme Lord is also eternal spirit person. He has no identification or wants or objectives in this material world, but the only difference is he is great as the creator and maintainer of everything, and we are tiny. That is it. But that is that understanding there is the beginning where bhakti begins. Then when bhakti starts, on that, without that, there's no, how can one interact, with the Supreme Lord, unless one understands, I'm an eternal spirit soul, he's a supreme spirit soul, he is great, I am small, my duty is to love him and serve him. That's the beginning of bhakti. If that is not there, then there's no spiritual transaction. We're just, asking for the Lord to facilitate our bodily designation. As long as we're asking for material things, we will be awarded material things. Dear Lord, give us our daily bread. Yes, here's some bread. As soon as we ask, please, as we see in this chapter, what did Gajendra pray for? Gajendra is not praying for, a pure devotee doesn't pray for liberation for the sake of liberation. They pray that, because I want to serve you, please take me out of this bodily identification of life. Yeah. Ask for liberation in that sense. So this is, this is sort of the theme that we're picking up here. When we, for one situa on the platform of bhakti, these are their meditations by which bhakti is possible. By which the reciprocation with the Lord is right. If we don't understand very firmly, without a doubt, you know, and scientifically how Krishna is completely transcendental, you know, we're not going to be able to reciprocate in bhakti. So they're integral to, you know, our reciprocation with the Lord. However, you know, when one comes to the platform of pure love, and one, you know, elevates to that platform of pure loving service, then there's no need to understand whether Krishna is God. In due course of time, when all the causative and effective manifestations of the universe, including the planets and their directors and maintainers, are annihilated, there is a situation of dense darkness. Above this darkness, however, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I take shelter of his lotus feet. At the very end, everything annihilated, everything's dark, and above that, there's a self-effulgent Lord. An artist on stage, being covered by attractive dresses and dancing with different movements, is not understood by his audience. Similarly, the activities and features of the supreme artist cannot be understood even by the demigods or great sages, and certainly not by those who are unintelligent like animals. Neither the demigods and sages nor the unintelligent can understand the features of the Lord, nor can they express in words his actual position. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead give me protection. So, you know, different devotees have expressed similar, such as Kunti Devi. She says the Supreme Lord exists everywhere, within and without. And we see that it says there are many, the Supreme Lord within one's heart. There are many, many yogis trying to find him. Nonetheless, even great yogis, demigods, saints and sages have been unable to understand the bodily features of that great artist, nor could they understand the meaning of his movements. What is then is to be said of ordinary speculators like the so-called philosophers of this material world? For them it is, he is impossible to understand. Therefore, we must accept the statements given by the Supreme when he kindly incarnates to instruct us. We must simply accept the word of Lord Ramchandra, Lord Krishna and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and follow in their footsteps. Then it may be possible for us to know the purpose of their incarnations. Quoting Bhagavad Gita 4:9, if by the Lord's grace one can understand him, one will immediately be delivered, even within this material body. His material, the material body will no longer have any function, and whatever activities take place with the body will be activities of Krishna consciousness. In this way, one may give up his body and return home back to Godhead. Now, in one sense, one returns back to Godhead even in this life. As Prabhupada said when he's in Vrindavan, he's talking about Melbourne and other places. Don't think, you know, when you're in that temple in Melbourne, don't think you're in Melbourne. You know, you're in Vrindavan. You know, one of the manifestations of the Dharma is within the heart of the devotee. If their consciousness is there, then It's not different, you know, from being in the spiritual world. It's like if the ambassador of America goes to another country, and they go to the embassy, you know, they never really leave America, you know. And, you know, that's where their heart is. You know, when the British ruled India, they really never really left Britain. The heart wasn't in India. The heart was in England. Always. All their activities is what they would do when they were in Britain. So, you know, they built their buildings and they, you know, to so that they could accommodate their cricket and this and drinking, this and that, whatever. So, you know, although they were in India, their activities is the activities that they would perform if they were in Britain. So that's where their heart was. And so for them it was sort of like being in Britain in another sense. So so he has described that personality of Godhead. And he has described that, you know, that person is, you know, Krishna in his different forms, Ramchandra, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They cannot be understood even by the greatest sages, yogis, like that. Somehow Gajendra has that understanding because he has accepted in his previous life, he has accepted how the Lord has described himself, and he is, you know, this sculpture, you know, means that this is the knowledge he understood in his previous life. He accepted this teaching and remembered it. If one accepts this teaching, fixes it, remembers it, and has faith in it, then that person can understand the person of Godhead. Others can't. We see that, you know, Indra wanted to test Krishna. See, as we're saying, on the platform of pure love, the Brajabasi, they're never testing Krishna, are you God? They don't care. They don't want to understand, they don't want to test him. But, and that we'll see when we get to the 10th canto, but others, they have to test, you know, whether, you know, such and such a person is the person I was Godhead. If one tests Krishna, then one will find that what Krishna is saying is confirmed by all the sages and all the scriptures and by his activities. Yes, he is the person of God. So what he is saying, you know, is exactly confirmed by his lip. You know, he's saying he's God, and he does know everything. You know, when Krishna was Dwarka, so he had 16,108 queens, 10 sons, a few daughters. You know, I have a small family. I've got no idea what my kids are doing right now. But Krishna knew. Oh, in this palace, every moment of every day, he understood. Not only did he knew, he was personally present there to reciprocate with them. So he showed that. So, you know, he's all-knowing. He could show it on many different scales. So to test Krishna, you know, God must be all-knowing. Krishna says, I am that God. I'm showing you, I have these all knowing. So like that. So you can test Krishna. But if one doesn't care to hear from Krishna, from God himself, or Ramchandra, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, no one, they're not interested to hear from them when God comes. If they're not interested to read, you know, Gita, study properly the Shastras, and what have you, if they want to, you know, just draw their own conclusions, and that person may be a demigod or a sage or a yogi, they will never understand. That's, you know, it's quite, so when you think of that, you know, our position as devotees is, you know, very rare and very fortunate. When you consider that personalities like Brahma are trying, you know, have doubt, you know, is this Krishna, you know, with everything he has, you know, he practically can understand so many things going on in the universe, all the scriptures, everything like that. Still, to understand that God is a person and have activities like Krishna does, he just couldn't quite put his faith there and had to test him. And you had to test so many people did. And yet, somehow or another, you know, we have accepted, oh, it's Krishna's. You know, Prabhupada comes to the West, is, you know, I'm telling you, Krishna is God. We just said, okay. Why shouldn't he be? I have no argument. You know, if he's God, so I'll have a look at it. Okay, read his book. Well, the book, you know, that's what you'd expect from God. God, you know, Krishna's saying, I have all these qualities. And you think, well, actually, you'd expect God to have those qualities. So, and then you read the Krishna book and you say, oh, well, Krishna demonstrated those and so many different things. So you think, well, why not? Makes sense. But it's very, very fortunate. So fortunate we are. So then to, you know, to have that understanding of Krishna's God and then to give up Krishna consciousness, that is the greatest misfortune. To have our opportunity and then to not take it, that would be extremely. So, text 7. Renunciates and great sages who see all living beings equally, who are friendly to everyone and who flawlessly practice in the forest the vows of Brahmacharya, Vanaprasa and Sannyas, desire to see the all auspicious lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead be my destination. So these are the qualifications of the devotees. As it says here, because they can see the spirit soul, they look upon everyone as a spirit soul who is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, thus they are competent to search for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is a crucial understanding to understanding God. That's the Brahma Bhuta platform from which bhakti begins. Understanding that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a friend of everyone, they act as friends of everyone on behalf of the Supreme Lord, making no distinction between one nation or another, or one community and another. They preach Krishna consciousness, the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, everywhere. And we don't distinguish between the Hindus, the Christians, the Muslims, the atheists, Judaism, the Buddhists. Preach Bhagavad Gita everywhere. Thus they are competent to see the lotus feet of the Lord. Such preachers in Krishna consciousness are called Paramahamsas. They have nothing to do with material conditions. One must take shelter of such a devotee in order to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the point. It's not possible to understand God, but if one takes shelter of the devotees who do understand him, then you can see him. The Supreme Person of Godhead has no material birth, activities, name, form, qualities, or faults. To fulfill the purpose for which this material world is created and destroyed, he comes in the form of human beings like Lord Ram or Lord Krishna by his original internal potencies. He has immense potency and in various forms, all free from material contamination, he acts wonderfully. He is therefore the Supreme Brahman. I offer my respects to him. So, he comes in the form of a human. So this makes it even more difficult to understand him. He's all knowing, he's before creation. He exists during the whole material manifestation, and he's thereafter. And yet he pops in as a human being, and looks like he's an ordinary human being. That just makes it really, if he didn't come as a human being, you know, might have made it easier. But when he comes as a human being and just does all these activities like an ordinary human being, it just, that's beyond material conception, that he's this, you know, eternal person, you know, who's bigger than the creation and the source of the creation. You know, someone who's the source of millions and billions of mountains and planets is walking around like this medium-sized human being about our size. But, you know, he's not an ordinary human being, because when he comes, he doesn't come, we come according to our karma. But he's not controlled by the material energy. He comes just to do what he wants to do. You know, he comes for something he wants to do. He wants to establish religious principles, protect the devotees who are following religious principles, you know, remove the demoniac, put order in the world, which is his design and created. So he comes to just look after his own creation. He never does anything else. Whenever he comes, he only does that. He never comes forced by his karma to suffer like a dog. You know. So therefore, he never displays that somehow he's controlled by the material energy like an ordinary human being. He only ever displays that he's a complete controller and maintainer of everything, the material manifestation. So that in itself proves that, you know, he's form, his activities, they appear to be ordinary, but they're acting in a completely spiritual way, completely aloof from the laws of material energy. So, then Prabhupada gives other, you know, examples of people who are chanting the name of Krishna. How is it that they become liberated if it's just a material name? He's killing, you know, the demons and they're becoming liberated. You know, if he's teachings in the Bhagavad Gita, material teachings, how is it people are becoming liberated by reading? So, you know, everything about the Lord, his name, his activities, they all produce a spiritual result, not a material result. I have my respectful obeisances under the Supreme Person of God, the self-effulgent Super Soul, who who is a witness in everyone's heart. And as I said in the beginning of the class, Prabhupada, you know, he would point this out to us again and again. You know, we bought this church, it was empty. No one was coming. And we have put Krishna there, we're chanting his name, we're hearing his teachings, and now it is full. And these people, you know, are becoming liberated. So it is proof. It's happening right in front of your eyes. This is what the Shastra says, and this is what is happening. So how do you say Krishna is an ordinary person? Where else do you see that? So, you know, nothing has to be accepted blindly. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Person of Godhead, the self-effulgent Supersoul, who is the witness in everyone's heart, who enlightens the individual soul, and who cannot be reached by exercises of the mind, words, or consciousness. So there's no way to understand, because he's completely spiritual, you cannot understand him by material means. He himself can enlighten us. We have to wait. We only have material means. If we can't understand the Supreme Person of Godhead by material means, and we only have material means, then how do we understand Krishna? He has to actually help us. He has to enlighten us. Otherwise it would never happen. And he does that. Now the example there is like the sun. You know, if we're in darkness and it's night time, if we want to, you know, see everything, you know, we can't, we have to wait for the sun to come. You know, we can't just force the sun to come. We can't make, you know, the sun will come in its own time, and when the sun comes, then we can see everything fully illuminated. So, our dependency, understand God is exactly like that. You know, people challenge, you know, show me God. You know, or, you know, one cannot challenge God, you know, force him to, that by force I will understand God. By force he will come before me and prove himself. None of that. Now, if understanding the personality of Godhead cannot be done by any material means, even by great sages and yogis and demigods, and it is only by the grace of the Lord enlightening us, just like the sun enlightens us. The next understanding, of course, is that if he is pleased with us, he may do so. And therefore, we reciprocate in a very friendly way. That's called bhakti. a little sincerity from the heart. And because he's the witness, he knows if we're trying to cheat or be insincere. The Supreme Personality of God is realized by pure devotees who act in the transcendental existence of bhakti yoga. He is the bestower of uncontaminated happiness and is the master of the transcendental world. Therefore, I offer respect to him. Okay, so there's the next conclusion. There must be bhakti. Now, who do we learn bhakti from? Those who are practicing, those who are, you know, fully expert in the art of bhakti. As Prabhupada would say, we don't go to the grocer. Can you teach me about bhakti and God? You know, we don't go to the cobbler. Yeah, we go to the bhakta. So, the person of God can only be understood by bhakti. Uh, and one must take to the activities of devotional service. These activities are called sattva or sudasattva. In the material world, activities of goodness, which is symptomatic of a pure brahmana, are appreciated. But the activities of devotional service are sudasattva. In other words, they are on the transcendental platform. Only by devotional service can one understand the Supreme. Even the brahmanas of the highest level, up to the demigods, up to Brahma, without bhakti, will not understand the person I've quoted. It's naishkamya. Mere negation of material activities will not endure unless one performs activities with reference to Krishna consciousness. Cessation of material activities will not be helpful. In hopes of achieving naishkamya, freedom from material action, many highly elevated sannyasis stop their activities, yet they fail and return to the material platform to act as materialistic persons. But once one is engaged in the spiritual activities of bhakti yoga, one does not fall down. Our Krishna consciousness movement is therefore an attempt to engage everyone always in spiritual activity, by which one becomes transcendental to material activities. The spiritual activities of bhakti marga, shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, padasevanam, lead one to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, as stated here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is realized by pure devotees who act in the transcendental existence of bhakti yoga. Srila Prabhupada summarizes, when one is freed from all contamination and he acts in devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master, one is on the platform of naishkamya. By such transcendental devotional service, the Lord is served. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So I was mentioning that in class, you know, a Bhagavatam class the other day. A very interesting statement, Prabhupada. We have that verse here quoted, and Yavilasita Sunyam, Kanaka Madhyanavritam. Right? And Bhakti, Bhakti Uttama, that, when one's activities are free from the desire for fruit of activity, Jnana Yoga, Stanga Yoga, activities that are favourable, so one must be doing something, and they're favourable to the Supreme Lord, then that is the Uttama Bhakti. And Prabhupada says, actually we must start from that platform. It's quite an interesting statement. That's where we start bhakti, properly speaking, and when we start bhakti on that platform, then the Lord reveals himself properly. We can start with, the four types of persons who approach Krishna for some material purpose. You know, I'm here to serve Krishna, to remove my distress. I'm here to serve, Krishna for some economic gain, et cetera, et cetera. But when, there is no material motive, Kama Gyan Stanga, it's just for the pleasure of Krishna, for serving Krishna, for his happiness, then Uttama Bhakti begins. And we should start our devotional service on that platform. Don't bother wasting time. it's good what others may do, but it will take a long time, many, 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 many lifetimes, to go back to Godhead. that if one wants to go back to Godhead, one should be serious like that, that I start there. Now, of course, we have so many different desires for this, that and the other. But what Prabhupada is saying is that if you place yourself under a pure devotee and follow his instructions, then you're starting at that pure devotional. You're starting that I am being trained in pure devotional service by this pure devotee. I'm starting there. And that's the danger of not accepting a spiritual master. See? Because then we're actually following our own, we're performing bhakti, but under our own material, it's not sudasattva, whatever material motivations are there, maybe there. And also, if we take shelter of someone who's not a pure devotee, we're being guided, they're not able to, if they're not on the platform of pure devotional service, they're not going to be able to teach us pure devotional service. So, that is the platform of the devotee. That's why it's important to actually take shelter of a pure devotee. It's called a spiritual master. Because then, even though we may not be pure devotees, but because we just follow the instructions of the pure devotee, we're as good as a pure devotee. That's what Prabhupada says. Now, I remember, very vividly that, in the beginning, because I literally stepped off the street, I won't go into all my vices, but that literally happened to the point that I jumped into the Sankirtan van and came back to the temple and basically then never left. I was, engaged in every vice, practically, that exists on this planet. And then I stopped because I then actually placed myself that what these devotees tell me to do, I will do from now on. If I want, and I understood that I want to learn the process of pure devotional service. I want to learn that from them, and if they say do this, I do this. And that's what I did. And I was literally just someone who stepped off the street. That's it. And I was just basically suffering so much that the one thing is I understood my life was a useless waste of time. That I understood. That's about my best realization. I had no idea who is God or, anything, anything. But I joined the movement at that moment with that understanding that whatever they say to do, that is the process. This is what I understood from Gita because I'd read the Gita. That's the thing. I'd read the Gita and I understood that to understand Krishna, you have to perform activities under the guidance of those who are expert in those in pure devotional service, and if you do that, Krishna will reveal himself, and gradually your bad habits will go away. So that's called starting from the platform of pure devotional service. I didn't want to learn mixed devotional service. I didn't want to learn how to go to a temple, relieve my distress and go away. I didn't want to, learn how to pray to Krishna, get some wealth and go away. I don't want to do any of that. I wanted to learn pure devotional service, how to go back to Godhead, and be transcendental in this lifetime. So that's how we begin on the platform of Uttama Bhakti. Not that we're pure devotees, but Uttama Bhakti, Prabhupada explains that generally tama means you're in ignorance somehow or another. You're either in ignorance in sattvagun, rajagun, or tamagun. It's all the covering. It's all the covered state. As long as we're not situated in pure devotional service to the Supreme Person of God, we're covered. If we're identifying as Brahman or whatever. That's all some degree of tama. Uttama means above that. No designation. So devotees say, from now on, you know, you're in this temple, you are no longer, you know, such and such material body. You are Krishna's servant. Okay, I'm now Krishna's servant. That's it. That's my identity. From day one, that's Uttama. That's above darkness. They say that's what it is. The Gita says it, Krishna says it. I'll accept it. Why not? I have so much conditioning, but I'm accepting it. Krishna is the control of the, you know, God is a person, his name is Krishna. Okay, sounds good to me. That's Uttama, it's above darkness. I didn't know who God was, now I do. So that's Uttama Bhakti, in that general sense, you know, in a very green sense. So, but we don't know anything, but when you take shelter of devotees who know everything perfectly, then you begin from Sudasattva. Not from Sudasattva, but Uttama Bhakti from the very beginning. And this is what Gajendra is saying. Any comments or questions on that? So, you know, because it's a very... happy with that? I can move on if you like. I'm just, you know.
When the sun rises,
yes,
everybody can see the sun at the same time.
Mm.
But when Krishna rises, not all devotees see you at the same time, right? Is that correct?
Yeah,
Krishna rises separately for each devotee.
Yeah, but you know, everyone sees the sun, but some you know, everyone sees the moon. Some people think it's a bit of cheese, you know, up there, a little, you know. Little kids, you know, oh look, you know, it looks like cheese. You know, some look at the sun and think it's like a, you know, about the size of a saucer, you know, or a, you know, a little plate. I think, oh, look at that up there. It looks like, you know, there's a little red thing, but it's about the size of a plate. I the children might try and grab it, climb a tree. They want to, they want to catch them in, you know. Sometimes little children say, you know, give me the moon, I want that. You know. They have real no concept what the moon is, so they're seeing it, but you know, their understanding is it's small enough to put in their hand and they'll hold it. You know, Mother Shoda made that mistake, so thinking, I'll tie Krishna up. He's unlimited. Seeing with their eyes is not understanding. So, you know, they're seeing Krishna, they're hearing Gita, but unless it's bhakti, they're not really seeing in tattvata. You know, one who knows me in truth, tattvata. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Vasudeva. It's interesting, so, as we said, discussed this, again, Vasudeva, who is all-pervading, to the Lord's fierce form as Lord Narasimhadeva. So, basically, Santaya, Vasudeva, and Gauraya, Lord Narasimhadeva, to the Lord's form as an animal, Lord Varahadeva. Fierce forms like Muddaya, to Lord Dattatreya, who preached impersonalism, Guna Damane, and Niveshaya, who's and Samyaya, to Lord Buddha and to all other incarnations, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who has no material qualities, but who accepts the three qualities, goodness, passion, and ignorance, within this material world. I also offer my respectful obeisances unto the impersonal Brahman effulgence. So, I was at a lady's house the other day, and she worships in her family line for hundreds of years. They worship Krishna a small deity carved out of stone from a place where Krishna performs his pastime, and a Dattatreya. Again, a shalagram, usually they have a moustache, Dattatreya. Most shalagrams or stones I've seen of Dattatreya always have a big moustache. So, but they've worshipped Krishna and Dattatreya. And I've seen that a few people, you know, that Dattatreya is a popular deity. Because we'll study him in the 11th canto, where he teaches Krishna consciousness. But to some, he also teaches impersonalism. So, in previous verses, it has been described that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no material form, he accepts innumerable forms to favour his devotees and kill the demons. The waves of the river flow incessantly, and no one can count how many waves there are. Similarly, no one can calculate when and how different incarnations of the Lord appear according to the necessities of time, place, and candidates. So, we're hearing how one must, you know, approach the expert devotees and learn the art of pure devotional service, how to engage in activities of devotional service. And, you know, the Lord appears in different forms to gradually bring us to this understanding. The Lord Buddha appeared because people were misusing the Vedas, and he stopped people from reading the Vedas. And then the Lord, through Lord Shiva, appeared as Sankaracharya to bring them back to the Vedas, but in an impersonal understanding. And personalities like Dattatreya also sometimes to first bring people with an impersonal understanding. And then Dattatreya also preached personalism. You know. So for some, you have to bring them at least to some level. And if they're on a level where they can understand bhakti, then Dattatreya would also preach bhakti. And then after Sankaracharya, then, you know, Lord Chaitanya, seeing that people again accepted the Vedas, and then he preached the bhakti. After his acharyas were sent to defeat the impersonalism of Sankaracharya. So, and we see here Krishna himself appears perpetually to speak the Bhagavad Gita. So all these different manifestations are, as we've said, that Krishna, in any of his forms, he does not come for some material purpose, but he comes for this transcendental purpose of taking people back to the spiritual platform. And all of his different forms and incarnations are for that transcendental purpose. He's not coming here forced by karma or because he has some material desires or sense gratification. He comes for that transcendental purpose. And you know, Krishna's form is not material. One is that each form acts in that transcendental way. But the other feature is that form of Krishna is non-different from unlimited varieties of forms, and yet he's still the one person.
Just jogging my memory, is Gajendra used as an example in Nectar of Devotion as someone who's still performing pure devotional service, even though he's calling out to the Lord to relieve him from a distressful situation? Because I think this pure devotion is anyam vilashita shunyam. But the way it's phrased is, it doesn't, a person can still perform pure devotional service, even if in times of distress he calls to the Lord for help.
That's right.
So was it Gajendran who seems just an example?
Yes. And I think that's about verse 21 and 22. We're up to 13. We're almost there. Hold that thought. It's in this chapter. You looking forward to that? Goraya and what was the other? Yep.
So usually the word mudaya is used in a derogatory way. Then how do we understand that you're calling out for help, but then you're calling the person who you're asking for help as a muda? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, that's right. So, you know, different Sanskrit words convey a similar idea, but depending upon the context in which, you know, they are presented, you know, we understand. So, of course, here it is in context referring to the Lord in his transcendental forms. And you know, so basically in this sense, you know, if we call someone a mudha, we might say they're like an animal or an ass. So in this sense, we're saying the Lord appears like an animal. And yet we understand it's not he's not an ordinary human being, nor is he an ordinary animal. He's always the Lord. Even when we say he appears like a human being, it's derogatory, but he's not a human being. If we say he appears like an animal, there's really no difference to saying he appears like a human being. They're both derogatory. He's not a human being. He's not a, you know, he's not an animal. He appears like that, but he's not an animal. He's not a human being. He's actually the personality of Godhead. And because we've established that we're dealing with the personality, we're talking about the person of God, it is completely transcendental. And yet, if he appears like an animal, you know, it doesn't. It's already established that that does not diminish his position as God. He can do that, and remains God. So it's. So basically saying, like an animal, like a human, but although he's like those persons, he's always God, never diminished. But see, those who haven't established those previous transcendental understandings, that he's before creation, you know, he's a source of creation, everything is manifestation of his energy, he's maintaining everyone and everything, all their bodies, he is the witness and the observer, and you know, he is there at the end, existing in his own transcendental right, and when he appears, he is that same Supreme Person, I've got it, and he's just coming to help people get out of that darkness. So therefore, you know, if that transcendental understanding hasn't been established, then when one sees that God appears as an animal, one would think, oh, so now he's an animal. God is everything. He's an animal. He's human. He's me. He's you. He's the wall. He's the chair. He's the sun. So, by holding, you know, holding the previous transcendental understanding, then we see him as an animal, but we understand he's not an ordinary animal. We see him as a human. He's not an ordinary human. We've got to hold that transcendental understanding as we perceive the next level, that he maintains that position as God and yet appears as an animal, but he's never an animal. He's always God. Not hearing from the Gita, not hearing from the Bhagavatam, they're not taking that first transcendental understanding, and then when it says God appears as an animal, they actually think he becomes an animal. Or he becomes a human. That when Krishna, when God appears as Krishna, he's not God anymore, he's a human. He's not the full God, he's literally just the limitation of a human. You know, they may give some credit, sattvic, whatever, you know, but they somehow, therefore, you know, if we meditate, you know, perhaps if Krishna had taken up some of the yogic processes and taken sannyas and given up activities, given up this battle of Kurukshetra, fighting for his kingdom, perhaps he could have again realized that he is, you know, risen again to the platform of God where he is one with everything, all knowing. You know, they think in those terms. You know, therefore, but Krishna, you know, he was involved in this battle and, you know, so many things, so he lost his opportunity, and then he incited Arjuna to, you know, and do that as well. So, you know. So they're thinking, and yet, but then you say, but Krishna lived in 16,000 palaces with 16. Oh no, that is myth. You're just adding some stories so that we will, you know. You know, once the human comes and that's it, and then you know, 16,000 wives, that's all myth. Holding Govardhan down hill, that's myth. Now, these are legends like that. They're a human being. You know, they see, you know, Varaha. There was a very famous bull, Varaha. People still worship him in temples all over. He lifted the earth. Ah, that's a myth. But as we've said, you know, then, if that is true, why is it, if there's a building that no one is coming to, even if it's a place of worship of God, still no one is coming to, and then if they chant Hare Krishna, they're all becoming liberated. Just as Krishna says in the Gita, that we're seeing there's something spiritual, there's a spiritual potency to his name. So his name, his form, none of these things. People are worshipping his form and are becoming liberated by the thousands. And they have done for thousands and thousands of years. So, but even they see so many Hare Krishna temples, so many devotees doing impossible things, giving up sinful life, becoming completely liberated, completely. So many good qualities, still they will not accept. That's the dog's obstinacy, as Prabhupada says. You know that Rath Yatra festival, I think, you know, the one in London, and Prabhupada walked the whole walk of the plane. I think it's about 7 kilometres or something. You know, that he walked that whole way, just like effort. And dancing, and he seemed to almost, you know, floating along effortlessly. His whole activities, you know, anyone who studies his life can see that, you know, there's something spiritual, you know, about, you know, who sleeps 1.5-2 hours a day has followers who are 25 years old, strong men and women, who can't keep up with this 75-80-year-old man who's had a couple of hours sleep, eats very little, and flies all over the world, and no one, you know, this is not ordinary. You know, there's something, you know, oh, no, 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 it's all myth, never happened. But thank God it's all documented. So, so this is why he's presenting this, you know, because this is a big stumbling block. So we've just heard all the philosophy. Oh, you know, God's so wonderful like that. And then someone, you know, so we've now got our faith in God, and then someone opens the door, comes and will worship God, and on the altar there's a big ball. Well, I've just read all the... Whoa, you know, I wasn't expecting that. You know, that really, it's a test, isn't it? So, you know, even when they see Krishna, you know, what to speak, you know, what to speak of the ball. But really, when you think about it, whatever form God appears in, if he is God, it doesn't matter. All his potency will be there. That is the nature of God. He can appear in any form he likes for the purpose. So it's a real test of one's understanding, faith. And, you know, I still remember reading these things, because I read Prabhupada's Bhagavatam, what he had up to about 10, Canto 10, chapter 14, in the first 9 months of being a devotee, and reading all these things about an elephant who's offering prayers to God, and giant crocodiles, and, you know, the Lord comes flying in on Garuda, you know, this big bird, and so many things. it tests your understanding, you know, of God. If you understand what God is, it's not a problem. But if there's a material concept of God, then these things you really have to, okay, I need to study a little bit more about what God is, because, you know, this is blowing my mind. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto you who are the super soul, the superintendent, and therefore we have that verse about the actor
dressed up.
You know, God can come in any way, you know, it's God. You can't recognize, oh, it looks like a boar. No, it's God. You know, a good actor, oh, is that such and such? Oh, gee, you wouldn't, you know, you couldn't even recognize him. So expert. That's how we see. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the super soul, the superintendent of everything, and the witness of all that occurs. You are the supreme person, the origin of material nature, and the total and of the total material energy. You are also the owner of the material body. Therefore, you are the supreme complete. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Now, here we see that we have these bodies, and we understand, you know, if we say, you know, as Prabhupada says, you look at a person and you say, you know, where is your arm? And, you know, here's my arm, you know, here's your leg, here's my leg, here's my head, like that. Where are you? Oh. And then you struggle, oh, where am I? With my arm. I have so many different things. Where am I? we can't see that, you know, that we're different from the body. But this is like a an apartment. So, you know, so many doors. And, if we get into an apartment, you know, where's your kitchen? You know, here. Where's your bathroom? Here. Where's your door? How do you go in and out? Yeah, there's doors there, windows there, you know, another door there. I can go in and out here and there like that. Where are you? Oh, I'm sitting here in the study like that. So our position is like that. Now, if we're in that apartment, and we're going, you know, say we're renting apartments, you know, so so we rent one apartment, so someone has, you know, we're staying there, but we're paying the rent, and then we may go to another apartment, and actually, you know, if you look all over the planet, there are so many apartments we could live in, but we don't own them. You know, someone has actually arranged that facility, and then we can go and stay in that facility if we can afford the rent. So here it is described when we see like that, that, you know, Krishna comes in his own form, although it's God, because he's always performing this activity of establishing religious principles, and he's doing that transcendental activity, taking people back to God. That's what he does. He doesn't come to endure any other material conditions or for material reasons. We look at our own position, that and he is a witness of everyone's activities, and he is awarding the nature of this world is that one gets their karma because someone has witnessed their activities, and we get a particular body which has been arranged by the person I've got it, so we can take, you know, one body, so many different bodies. So that whole, just like there's many apartments all over the world that we can rent and inhabit for some time, if we look at the whole material world, we see that there are many different bodies that the living entity can inhabit according to their destiny and particular desires, and that that arrangement has been made so that it accommodates any material desire you have. There are 8,400,000 different species of life which can accommodate all varieties of material desires and all varieties of punishments and all varieties of assisting the soul to progress back to a proper level of consciousness. So that arrangement has been made. We haven't made that arrangement. Someone, you know, we can understand. Someone else has made that arrangement. That is Krishna. So therefore we can see the difference between ourselves and the, you know, the Supreme Lord. And so he is called Sarvajaksha because everything in the material world works under his supervision. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9:10. And of course, we also have very little say. So for instance, you know, we are forced to accept a particular material body according to our karmic debts. So if we don't have the good fortune, the good karma, we will not get the good body in this world. We will get, you know, if we have the bad karma, we have a debt, we will get the unfortunate sort of bodies. And we're forced to accept that. We might think, oh, I might have this karma, but I want that demigod body. Oh, no, you take it. You become a dog. So, you know, similarly, you know, when we're renting an apartment, it's like that. You know, we go, oh, I like the looks of the penthouse up there. You know, oh, yes, you know, show me the money. Oh, no, I can't, no money, but I want it. Oh, no. So you're forced, no. You see, in between these two beautiful big buildings there, up the back, right up the back lane, the little tin shed, you know, with a mattress on the ground, that might be more suitable to what you can afford. Or, you know, there's the street, on the street. So, you know, we're forced. So, in this way, of course, we, you know, by examining our position within, you know, the bodies that we take compared to what the Lord does, and when he appears, we see that there's a huge difference. It is one way to recognize it, the difference between the Supreme Lord and ourselves. Yeah.
But you said that there is no difference between Lord and his body.
Yes.
We have a difference. So, he also has many forms. So, and we see that some of the forms worship superior forms, like Narayana and Vishnu, they worship Krishna. So, is it one person?
Yeah, it is the same person. So, for instance, you know, when Krishna disappeared from the gopis in order to increase their love and separation, and the gopis were searching out after Krishna. So that Krishna appeared in front of them as in his Narayan form. So he was Krishna. And because he's also Narayan, he appeared in that form. The same person. I have disappeared from them. They're chasing me. And I'm going to appear in the form of Narayan. See what they do. That's Krishna. Because he's Krishna, he's also Narayan. He's the person hiding from the gopis. Same one they're chasing. He's hiding as Narayan. So when they came and saw Krishna in his Narayan form, it's the same person, but they weren't very much interested. They offered respect, oh, here's Narayan, here's God. Offered respect, but their interest was in Krishna, although that was Krishna. So, you know, so it gives you an example how you see it. It's the same person. So it's not like another person came. The same person they were searching for, he appeared in his Narayan form. And that was how he hid himself. Plain view. So the same person. Like an actor in disguise, in a different costume. Okay. But he has these different costumes, but he wears them eternally. So the difference between an actor is that that person, you know, appears in a particular form through the costume, and sometimes they may, you know, like the Hunchback in Notre Dame, you know, they put a, you know, the one eye in, hunched up and dragging the feet. And then the same actor, they take off all that, and then they're in the love story and they're all the handsome man, you know, with the girl and what have you. But it's the same person. Now, but they have to change costume. There's a lot of difficulty for them to do that, you know, hours and hours of work. But Krishna, you know, he eternally manifests as those particular forms, so it's like a different costume, but they're eternal because they do suit a eternal pastime of loving exchanges with devotees. So, now, you know, an actor, you know, they can perform, they can, you know, they can be the superhero, like Thor. There's an Australian actor, he's now famous as Thor. What's his name? Well, the girls love him very strongly. But anyway, he can appear in the costume of Thor, and everyone loves him, he's the big hero. But he can't maintain that eternally. Everyone would like to see him eternally, but he can't be that eternally. But Krishna can. You know, Krishna can maintain a loving relationship eternally. So that form is eternally there, although it's the same person. So it's like an actor with a costume or a particular dress, and a, you know, but it, because it facilitates an eternal pastime of loving relationship where, between the hero and the heroines, then he can maintain that eternally. And he can maintain that form even while he's maintaining many other forms for other different loving transactions and purposes like that. So he is like the actor who can perform all roles eternally. So, you know, that act like that. So it is the same person. And, you know, an actor, if he's playing the role of the loving boyfriend, then he can't also play the role of the hunchback. You know, if he was, imagine he's doing this, he's on scene, he's on stage, he's playing the loving boyfriend, there's a little break, intermission, runs into the next stage with other people watching, he puts on his costume for the hunchback, you know, drags himself around, hunchback, and then he's trying to change back into the boyfriend, but you know, he comes back, half his costume's not quite right. He can't do that. But Krishna can do that, you know, because his form is without material limitation. Whatever an actor can do with so much limitation, Krishna can do it without any limitation, and he can do it unlimitedly, eternally. That's the difference. Imagine, you know, someone would be very well paid in Hollywood if they can perform all the roles at the same time, in all the same costumes at the same time. You know, but no one can do that because they have some of the limitations. So Krishna is an actor, so many costumes, but he can maintain it. There's no material limitation. Take all the material limitations off, and then that's what he does. But it's very similar to an actor. So it's the same person, that's the point. And that's the idea of the actor analogy, is that we understand it's the same person in a different costume, different role. See? And that's why that analogy is good. And that's how we understand Krishna. It's the same person, and yet he has this form as Narayan, Dattatreya, but it's the same person. There is only one person, there is only one court.
Krishna multiplied into unlimited Vishnus, taking the role, and each Vishnu had unlimited power.
Mm.
You could do that in 6 months.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And then Brahma understood, I've tested him, and he's definitely God. Yeah. Therefore, yeah, Prabhupada gave a lecture on Lord Ramchandra's appearance day. And he was explaining that we worship Lord Ramchandra equally as we worship Krishna. We don't see Lord Ramchandra as lesser. It's actually just Krishna. Sometimes devotees, I've seen even in this temple, are a bit critical if you show too much attention on Ramchandra's appearance day, because we're supposed to be devotees of Krishna. You know, it's all, and some devotees are almost a little cautious about making too much arrangement for Ram, because you know we're supposed to be devotees of Krishna. Don't get too far on this Ram, and you're getting on a bit of a track. You know, there's that. But we don't do that. We actually give the same, because Lord Ramchandra is the same person. It is Krishna.
Then what do we mean by love for Krishna?
And there's a lecture by Prabhupada, and he stresses that point for a long time. There you go.
So what do we learn from that episode, the past time, where I think somebody comes to Hanuman and say that, see, Krishna is calling you. And he says, oh, I'm too old, I can't get up. And then after some time, somebody comes and tells him, no, Lord Ramchandra is calling you. And he immediately jumps and goes.
Who is Sanatan?
Hanuman.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Why, what
is
to be learned from that?
Well, as Prabhupada points out, that, you know, according to our particular, taste for how we love the Lord, you know, we have an, then, you know, we may prefer to love Lord Ramchandra more so than we prefer to love Krishna.
That's okay, mm. But he's saying when people say that Krishna is calling you, oh, I'm too old.
Mm.
I mean, when the Lord is calling you
mm.
as a servant,
mm.
I mean, because his mood is such an exalted servant,
mm.
I mean, okay, the Lord is calling, I should go.
Mm.
But, I mean, he is showing a reluctance to even move.
In fact,
I mean, that,
yeah,
that
it's
that
a, in fact, in the lecture the Prabhupada gave on Lord Ramchandra, he used that example of Krishna and the gopis where Lord Narayan appeared to explain that. So the gopis, there's God. You know, they come there, they offer his base, they offer respects, but they really weren't much interested in serving him. You know.
But they offered respects.
Yeah, they offered.
Hanuman was, Lord Krishna's calling you, he's not bothered. He says, I'm too old, I can't go.
Mm.
He's not bothered.
Mm.
I mean, that's extreme.
Well, yeah, so, you know, that may be there, but it's the same principle. It's exactly the same principle, that in either case, God is there, but they're not really wanting to reciprocate with that form of God, because they are fully, eternally engaged in reciprocation, heart and soul, with the same person, but in another feature, And they never leave that service to God. So there's no fall down because they're eternally engaged in service to the person of God in heart and soul. And they never leave that platform. So in other words, while they're, you know, meditating upon their Supreme Lord with love, he appears in a different form, but they never break their loving meditation and their desire to serve and their plans to serve that Lord. So there's no fall down. They never depart from the absolute platform. It's just a matter of rasa, which Prabhupada explains in that lecture. That's just a matter of taste. But actually the transcendental position of pure love of God and eternal service to the Lord is they never deviate from that for a moment. But it's just a matter of taste, you know. And yet it's the same person. That's Prabhupada's point. It's actually, you know, and we, you know, therefore in the Brahma Samhita, it also says that, you know, there may be, there's one original candle which lights all the other candles, but, you know, these forms of Sringa, they manifest like that. But so that example that Lord Brahma gives is that they're each, that's the same candle, same size, same power. There's another one, there's another one, there's another one. They're all the same size, all the same power. Yet one is the original. That is Krishna. But we shouldn't see that, you know, oh, there's Lord Krishna, oh, big candle, like that. Lord Ramchandra, little candle, like that. We shouldn't see like that. One candle. But, you know, a candle may have the same candle burning power, yet it may, there are different ways that that's not manifest. So sometimes, you know, you put a candle within a little lamp holder or something, you know, and different ways where it's got the same burning power, but you're not exposing it all. You want to dim a light. Candle's burning exactly the same brightness as the other one, but in this one you want a lesser light, so you have a little, you know, arrangement whereby the light is dimmed, and yet it's the same candle power. So, you know, therefore, the deity in the temple is dimmed, understood in the same way. That's a big one. We don't look at the deity of the Lord that somehow, you know, well, if God were personally present, that would be one thing. You know, the deity, okay, you know, representing God. You know, one lecture Prabhupada said, you know, and sometimes he does say it in his books, you know, the Archivigra is a representation of God. And then he said, no. The Archivigraha is non-different. You know, it is God. Not like a partial representation or even a representation. It is Krishna. Okay. That's how. There's no difference. In any of the incarnations, Archivigraha is one of the forms that the Lord takes in this world. So if we don't understand this philosophy, how will we treat the deity in the temple? If we can't understand between Krishna and Ramchandra, how will we look at the deity, which is made from stone? Unless we understand this philosophy, we will not worship the deity properly. And if we do understand, then our worship of the deity becomes so much more ecstatic and proper. And without offences and, you know, enthusiasm. You know, therefore, you know, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, when we have our new Brahman initiates, and, you know, still their level of how they worship the deity, you know, must mature considerably by hearing from senior devotees, because they're not necessarily properly seeing God, Krishna, manifest fully, as you know, because as we're thinking, you know, there's Krishna and then there's Ram, you know, down here somewhere. So what will they be thinking of the deity? You know, the respect is there, but there's an anomaly in their understanding that Krishna is fully present.
So in light with this, how do we understand three names of Ram equal to one name of Krishna?
In the same way that you know, the candle power is equal, yet it's not always displayed. So in the form of Lord Ramchandra, in the form of Vishnu, thousand names of Vishnu, you get the same benefit by. Now Prabhupada says it in this way. This is a very interesting way that Prabhupada says it in one of his lectures. He says, you get 1,000, if you chant 1,000 names of Vishnu, you get the benefit, all that benefit by saying once the name Ram. If you say three names of Ram, you get the same benefit by saying the name of Krishna. He says, therefore, within Krishna, he is equal to, you know, Krishna himself, he is equal to three Rams. So, you can't say that Krishna and Ram are different. That means, Prabhupada is saying in that way, that within Krishna, there's three Rams. It's not like there's Krishna and there's something separate Ram. Krishna is also Ram, but three times. He is Ram. So we're saying that Ram is Krishna, and Prabhupada is also saying that Krishna is Ram three times. So that means that if Krishna, you know, reduces the degree by which he manifests his transcendental opulences as the personality of Godhead, if he reduces that, turns the dial down three times, he's Ram. If he turns the dial down 1,000 times, it's Vishnu. But it's the same person. Turn it all the way up, it's Krishna. But it's the same person. You know, we have a dimmer for these lights. You can turn it down, you can turn it. But the same power never leaves the actual. The power never actually leaves the light. You know, there's a certain amount of power that powers these lights, 240 volts, and it's permanent. But by the dimmer, it appears that, oh God, some of the power's gone. No, it's still there. You know? But so Krishna is like that. The power is always there, where the data trail. But the difficulty with these lights, with the example of the lights, is that with Krishna, he can manifest his full potency as God even within stone. What to speak of Dattatreya, or Ram, or Buddha. Why? Because Dattatreya, Buddha, stone, they're all manifestations of his energy. They're all him. They're all his energy. It's not different from him. And he can manifest his full potency within any aspect of his creation, because it's all him. You know, so you know, as individuals, you know, we can to some degree, you know, we have you know, whatever strength, intelligence, or personality we can manifest through different parts of our body. I'll give an example. I had a karate teacher, right? So, you know, he was a very talented man. Now, and very intelligent, and had a lot of self-discipline, self-control. So we might think, oh, he can only manifest that through his words. No. He could manifest that through different, you know, bodily actions and karate things and so many things. My father said, you know, watch what he does. And this karate teacher, he, with his feet, he twirled his toes around clockwise, and then his little toe. He twirled his little toe. He could do all toes, and he twirled them around clockwise and anti-clockwise as he wanted. He had such control of his body. I'll never forget, I was a little kid. I've never seen anyone do anything like it. But he is a person who has, you know, this quality of you know, cleverness and self-discipline. He can manifest that even through his toe. I could understand what sort of a great person this person is. Great. I thought, you know, only through his arms and his powerful kicking he could manifest his, even his little toe, I could understand this person is great. Greater than anyone I've seen. So, you know, Krishna is like that. He can manifest his greatness through any aspect of his, it's all him, it's all him. Any part of material creation, spiritual creation, it's all him.
That is all Vishnu Tattvas. All Vishnu Tattvas can do that. Lord Ram.
Yeah. Now, the thing is with Krishna, right, as we see with the example with the gopis, yeah, they can all manifest, you know, if required. Krishna, why doesn't Krishna manifest his full attractiveness through Lord Narayan?
Because he's there, in that he's playing a certain role where he's allowing people, are worshipping him in awe and reverence.
People want to worship him in awe and reverence.
So he doesn't take that intimate about flute, and that's why we say the four differences between.
Yeah.
Because that is, as we said, like when, again, taking the same episode, when Krishna was in the Narayana form, when Radharani came, he couldn't be that. He had to drop his two arms and become, take the Krishna form. He just couldn't. So, it's... it's a mood.
That's right. His forms purposely facilitate, and in the spiritual world, it facilitates rasa, love, and different tastes. In the material world, it can also facilitate rasa, like Damodar, the baby Krishna, but sometimes it facilitates establishing religious principles in stepping stone fashion to bring people up to the level gradually of rasa. So, you know, therefore, so for instance, you imagine, you imagine the sannyasis studying the Vedic Upanishads, renouncing everything in this world, giving up their family, because, you know, they don't know, they're not convinced about the variety of the spiritual world. They're more convinced about Brahman. Dattatreya sitting there with his big moustache, very male orientated, teaching his very, very deep philosophical understanding of the nature of this world and how to live in this world with complete renunciation and detachment. And while the sages are sitting there, you know, he starts raising his eyebrows and giving them, you know, loving looks, encouraging them as if, you know, as if, come and embrace me and kiss me. You know, how long do you think they would sit there in front of Dattatreya, you know, It'd be inappropriate.
That's interesting. You said that because when the sages wanted to, they were in the mood that they wanted to enjoy Lord Ram. He says, not just not now.
Yeah, we want to be like Sita.
So he says, not now. And he says, in a different, and he gives them the opportunity as in the Krishna form.
No.
But as Lord Ramchandra, he is not able to relate to them.
Yeah.
He says, no.
That's right. So he doesn't, it would be inappropriate because they're still not quite pure enough, purified enough, because they're in the body of sages and they're performing different types of renunciation and studies in the forest. And the appropriate facilitation of their desire to be like Sita, to love him like Sita, would be that they take birth in different bodies, in different surroundings, and see Lord Ram in his form as Krishna. Only then can that properly be facilitated. Otherwise, you know, in that life he only has one wife. What would they do? Have, you know, he's got one wife and a bunch of sannyasis following around wanting to kiss him. You know, how, you know, it just doesn't work. So, and, you know, the animal forms of the Lord as well, they facilitate, different features, the Nrsingha, the Varaha, Matsya, they all facilitate different attractions, you know, certain persons are particularly attracted. So that's rasa. Now, how are we going for time? 4:52. So we finished on 13. Let's just leave that there. I think we'll finish sweetly with a little taste of rasa. And of course, as you can see, without these understandings, how are we going to enter into the 10th canto? You know, without these understandings. They're paving our way to, you know, so that when we hear the pastimes of Krishna, we're bearing in mind all these wonderful transcendental realizations, so there's no possibility for us to see Krishna's pastimes in a material way. But of all the pastimes of the Lord, what to speak of the boar, you know, and this one and that one, it's the pastimes of Krishna as a human that are most bewildering, most difficult to understand. So therefore, you know, this is paving our, purifying our heart to bring it to the point where we can relish that level of bhakti and rasa. All right, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Hanandi. So, you know, it's surprising, isn't it? There's so much nectar when you're hearing about the fight between a crocodile and an elephant.
Hare Rama.